grew up in Alberta, and all the other kids I knew from Yiddish-speaking homes, they used to get sent to a camp near Toronto, actually, called Camp Nyvelt, which I'm sure many of you know. Oh, it's great. We've got the whole cell here tonight. I'll get the Paul Robeson pictures out. But, you know, they'd come back, and I'd ask them, like, so how was it? And they'd go, like, it was fantastic, man. Pete Seeger was there. And I subsequently found out that Pete Seeger really was there. You know, they got, for all I know, they had Woody Guthrie and Cisco Houston and Leon Trotsky and Dr. Zhitlovsky and three of the Scottsboro boys. You know, they got Pete Seeger, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Well, the only little boxes that anybody ever even heard of at the summer camp I went to were called Tfillin. There's a black one, and a black one, and a black one, and a black one. And they're all made out of kosher animals, and they all look just the same. I didn't have a lot of choice. My father was possibly the single most prominent Hussid in all of Coalbanks, Alberta. And if only my father had had the courage to throw back his leonine Talmudic head in what the Goyim, the ethical Goyim, would call a frenzy of legalistic rage, point his forefinger out the door and say unto me with the ossified implacability of all the ages, Avec fin montier, depart this house, you jazz singer, you. Well, my mother sat weeping in the corner, smashing every Yossele Rosenblatt 78 in his cantorial record collection. If only a shelf full of Talmud had caved in upon me one day, leaving my Goyesher cup forever addled. If only tradition had barfed me forth onto the dry sands of Western civilization, I could have grown up into a big shot, a contender, a stammering, nattering, chest-pulling Jewish intellectual with nothing on my mind but social justice and yellow-haired chickses, the hero of a thousand novels. Aye, but on account of my sins, I was pulled out of the dress rehearsal for the Major C.E. Douglas Collegiate Institute Christmas and New Year's Gala. Participation compulsory if you wanted to pass music. Just as I was stepping into the spotlight, blacked up like a pair of Passover shoes, a derby hat clutched to the heart of my red vest, my payas, my side locks tucked up inside a curly wig. I was in the middle of the chorus, the solo chorus of I Want a Girl Just Like the Girl, when into the gym comes my father, hopping and twitching and flapping his arms, ignoring the screams of the teacher to run right up and drag me from the gym in full sight of 25 other giggling minstrels. A family emergency, yelled to the teacher, and to me, Zosach Shaman in Vatten Halls, Chomoreisel, music lover, boom! Ay, my poor father. On top of all his other problems, he had to go and have me, too. A man of his education, stuck inside a candy store in Coalbanks, Alberta. And he wanted to be somebody yet. No, go be somebody in the middle of nowhere. In Gulas, I feel it in Gulas. In exile, even from the exile. What could he do? Well, he could run the only Shomer Shabbos, the only Sabbath-observant candy store between Winnipeg and the Rockies. He could run the only candy store in the world to smell of gallnuts, the stuff they use to make the ink for Torahs and tefillin and mezuzahs. He could become the town's scribe and cantor and still have time to run his candy store 12 hours a day. The gallnuts were bad enough, but with his passion for righteousness, it could go yet dark in the eyes. For him, it was already too late. But me, I was gonna be a great rabbi, just like the rest of his family. I was a Jew with beard and sidelocks, thank God. Well, a Jew anyway. and with side locks, and hidden away in the middle of my father's cantorial records, Rosenblatt, Schirotte, Leibele, Waldman, he had them all. Hidden away there, one, just one unprepossessing little bombshell, Elvis Presley. And in my bedroom, between the mattress and the box spring, where my mother wouldn't find it. Well, no, she'd lift up the mattress when she went to make the bed. One copy, slick and nearly new. One copy, glutton you, my hands still tremble just thinking about it. Of Nudist Life. Shmuley Greenberg gave it to me after I found him abusing his tits one day. Elvis, nudist, I may have had payas, but I was hip. Who the hell wanted to be a rabbi and spend the rest of his life deciding which chickens were kosher and which had to be thrown away? I knew what I wanted. I was going to be the nudist Elvis Presley, performing only in nudist camps. Singing Heartbreak Hotel to audiences full of girls, women, female babies who didn't care if I gazed upon their nakedness. My God, they wanted I should look, and who I didn't care if they saw what I had. A rabbi. I'd seen our laundry, shelkies and petticoats and intoisen and matkes and halkes and bloomers. My God, are there even English words for these things? It was our regular Eaton's catalog of horrors from 1903, and we even had indoor plumbing yet. A rabbi. Unless I could start a new kind of Hasidism. Me, Joinolevkis, the governing Jewish nudist with his ball-bearing hips and daven and sing Yiddish folk songs to rooms full of girls, women. Nudist? I didn't even get my coat on. My father schlepped me out of there in a headlock with my head and shoulders buttoned up inside his coat and my tuchus exposed to the prairie wind. My name might be Jonah, but if Pinocchio was any indication, I'd rather have been swallowed by a whale than locked up inside my father's winter coat. The stink of mothballs and sweat in there, the taste of his shirt between my teeth, the bounce, bounce, bounce of my head against his chest. I was tiresome already. He smoked cigars from his own store, three for a dime, and he stank like a club car. I couldn't tell anymore whether my tears were from terror or the stench. My lips and teeth were covered with the residue of my makeup. And by the time we got home, the rest of Al Jolson was on my father's white shirt. Sit down, Lev Noyev, Mr. Letcher. And he threw me into a chair. My mother came in from the kitchen, her face the color of cheesecloth. No, also, Kimshain, Rav Noyev has to leave soon. Rav Noyev had an appointment in a nudist colony. My mother spoke up. Child, take it easy. He's only a boy. Boy? A pig lies in the mud, waving its cloven hooves in the air and cries, eat me. I'm kosher. Boy? This isn't a boy, it's a Presley with payas. I wanted the earth to swallow me up like it had done to Koylin, the son of Yitzhar. While his parents are breaking their backs, he shouldn't have to spend his life in a candy store doling up poison to vipers. What is this? This boy been sneaking into the house? Spinoza? Comic books? A heresy. For idiocy, this one is too good. Not Spinoza. Not comic books. Not Karl Marx or Bert Sozo. No, what then? What is he been sneaking into the house? His parents aren't looking. And he held up my copy of Heartbreak Hotel. Elvis Shay gets Presley. The lascivious howler, the bum that not even a guy like Ed Solomon wants should be on his parade of television foolishness. And where do you think he's been sneaking it? You would think that even Mr. Insolent Stiffneck would have the decency to hide such garbage with his dirty laundry or his library of fine art books. I wish. But no, not this one. Right here between Ursula Rosenblatt singing Kaylee Kaylee and Jack Pierce's At the Entire Midgard, here resides the son of Belial singing, what is it, Heartbreak Hotel. Now, my son, and he turned to me, quite gently, really. Let me touch you, let me explain for you the meaning of this saying of your sage, Rabbi Elvis Ben Orla. Elvis, the son of Foreskin. Heartbreak Hotel. Heartbreak in Jewish, this acts of broken hearts. The hotel is an Achsanya, a place where you stay for only a night. No, that is another way of saying that somebody is with acts of broken hearts. Correct, that the event itself is Hartzassendig. And what means Hartzassendig? Something whose last oop by Emerson's heart, which rips somebody's heart out, and when it's tearing out of the heart takes place. Back in the Achsanya, the place where you stay for only a night. Though my Kamash Balloon, what does this teach us? A deep and profound moral lesson. That before I throw you out of this house for once and for all, I'm gonna first to rip your heart from your chest for killing you, bothering me for days. Hearts, veins, arteries, the whole story straight from your chest and leave it for the dogs like the blood of the wicked in the days of the prophets. Any questions? I shook my head mutely and wished I was dead. Good. Mr. Wolf in sheep's clothing understands everything. But don't leave yet, Mr. Whose mind is lower than mud. In a minute from now, you can tell me all about women. But first, let's bring this business car close. And he held up my copy of Heartbreak Hotel. And he read off the title again. And he read off the writing credit, and the serial number, and the label, and time. And he dropped one hand and with the other flung the record at me with all his strength. Heartbreak Hotel, the unread Torah of my youth. Heartbreak Hotel, which I'd never even had the chance to play. Defiled by the hands of an unbeliever. Arise, O Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered. But all that scattered were the pieces of my record. After it bounced off my nose and my father finished beating me over the head with it, he threw it to the floor and stomped it to a thousand pieces. My mother was screaming, my father was yelling, I was crawling around on the floor trying to salvage the relics of my normalcy. My mother was telling my father that he should shut up, that the angel of silence should take him and all his sainted forebears all the black years. You'll sacrifice your son to Elvis Presley, she said. Istana tuter nish kafuter. Ya tatter, not a father. A father punishes. A father doesn't kill. My father answered her something in Polish. I tried to crawl out of the room, but my mother grabbed me by the collar and held me too. They went back to Yiddish. Shy of this magazine, he is 6 months old already. No, tell me, in 6 months, has the boy grown a foreskin? Not for want of trying, said my father. I gazed hopefully down my chest. Stand up, said my mother, and stop staring at the floor already. I was supposed to explain myself now. I knew what I was supposed to say, But how the hell was I supposed to stand there with half my head in blackface and tell them I wanted to be like everybody else? I couldn't stand everybody else. Not there in coal banks, not in yeshiva in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where they used to call me cowboy and shaggers. Hey, cowboy, was machin' the fayard? How are your horses? Not anybody or anything in the whole wide world which God had created according to his will. My parents wanted to hear about my boyish curiosity, and all I could think about was how much I hated everybody and everything around me. Jews, goyim, mailboxes, lampposts, then novels and comics and Talmud and occasional movies that serve me as friends. The whole thing burst over me like a sudden storm. I wanna be a success with women, I wailed. I wanna win friends and influence people. And we're stopping you, asked my father. We want you should have friends. But how's this schmutz gonna help? I didn't know. I didn't even know why I'd said it, except that I had to say something. But Nemjula Mushal, the girls. Like, take the girls, for instance. How am I ever gonna find out about this stuff? I mean, they even talk about it in the Torah, and I still don't know what it's all about. My parents both winced. The older I got, the more prone I was becoming to talk English in Yiddish words. All right. But if I don't find out about this stuff somehow, even that's always boxing a pimp. I should grow up to be a pimp. My parents were staring at me as if they'd gone into the Louvre and found Milton Berle where the Mona Lisa should be. Who's this Matthias Gevorening Ganzen? You gone completely nuts? What's with the pumps all of a sudden? I, in the heat of my eloquence, in the middle of my king's Yiddish, I called a pimp a pimp. Forgetting that to my parents, a pimp was a thing that water came out of on fire. It's English, a pimp. No, we didn't talk about this sort of thing too much at home. So I explained to my parents what I thought a pimp was. They got the general idea, and then they explained to me, since I was such a man of the world, exactly why pimps became pimps. My disappointment was all the answer they needed. No pimple, said my mother. No, my little pump, forget all this foolishness and go back to school. I'll give you a note. They'd forgotten already how my father had dragged me home, and I could see this was no time to remind them. So I ran like hell the 6 blocks back to Major Douglas, my hand holding on to my yarmulke, and my payas flapping in the wind. Oh, thank you very much. People often ask me what it's like to grow up in a place like that in these circumstances. And I have to say, one of the advantages to living in a small town is that you become that thing in the small town. So you're the guy with the payas. And eventually people get used to you and begin to ignore you, which is exactly, this is what I dreamt of. Unfortunately, I then had to start going to high school, where I had to deal with a whole new set of teachers. And remember, this is Alberta in the 1950s. These were social credit teachers. These were, basically teachers who thought of Calgary as some sort of Zionist plot. Now, especially geniuses like our English teacher, who had us read The Merchant of Venice and Oliver Twist, one right after the other, and then had the chutzpah to send me to the principal just because I came into class one day with my payas hanging down, a fake beard looped over my chin, mumbling and muttering while I went through everybody's pockets. When the old bat wanted to know what I thought I was doing in her class, I shoved my hand into Darius Fong's front pocket and said in my best Hyman Kaplan voice, "You don't know, missus. I'm the youngster from the eldest from Zion, and I'm looking here for a pound flesh." I told the principal that Mrs. Nolan's choice of reading material, or maybe it was the Board of Education's, was making me the butt of prejudiced jokes and getting me into fights on my way home from school. Not only that, but she'd forced me to read Half-Knotted Jew Eyes in front of the whole class. The principal told me to apologize. I told him to tell Shakespeare and Charles Dickens to apologize. And if they wouldn't listen, then he should tell Mrs. Nolan or we'd use her blood for day-old matzahs. Well, I was kicked out of English for a couple of weeks, but the idea finally soaked through. Instead of Ivanhoe, where the beautiful Jewess Rebecca converts to Christianity at the end of the book just so that I'd never be able to go out with her, we got to read poems that didn't say anything about anybody. Only daffodils and dead birds and minstrel boys and corners that'd always be England. And Mrs. Nolan hadn't acknowledged my hand since. Not that the principal was such a guardian of Israel or anything. He'd already assigned me to a social worker, and she was the one who got him to give in. By that social worker. If she'd been Jewish, they'd have called her Miss Damo, this Miss Peggy. Miss Damo, call me Peggy. To call her Miss Damo to her face was like telling her that she wasn't your friend. And who wouldn't want to be her friend? She was a regular pocket Venus, that Miss Damo. In a form-fitting skirt and top. The worst possible social worker for a kid like me. She was always touching my arm. I used to roll up my sleeves before I went in. And when she put her hand on my shoulder, and I don't mean from behind, it was strictly Yoda Lay. Oh, I'm at the Matterhorn. Skip another half inch. I'm gonna need a glass eye. It couldn't have been all bra. You seem so angry, Joey. I told her it was the anti-Semites. Whenever I mentioned Hitler, she crossed her legs. If I wanted to see any more, I had to tell her that I felt inadequate in the locker room, or else mention my girlfriend. She'd let her breath out then. Her left ankle would uncoil from around her right calf, and she'd sit there, legs slightly parted, while I dropped my book, my pencil, my yarmulke, my wristwatch, anything short of my pants. I'm not sure I felt guilty. I really did have a girlfriend, and she really did have a father, a psychiatrist, who'd taken a personal interest in me. I was the only kid in all of Alberta who could say anal retentive in Yiddish. I felt terrible using Sabina and her father to get a glimpse of alien crotch, but I couldn't help myself. Sabina was my age. Miss Damel was a mature woman, fully developed, and I had to talk nonstop to keep from drooling. I made up complexes, sores, true confessions, anything to keep her off balance. I even told her I had a rabbi complex, that I felt guilty for not being a sage. While the rest of the kids were playing cowboys and Indians, I told her I was stroking an imaginary beard and inspecting my mother's poultry. You could practically hear the bells go off in her head. She was scribbling so furiously her pencil broke. She crossed her legs, uncrossed them. I said Hitler complex. She crossed them back again the other way, but too fast, and had to go behind the desk and turn her back to me to fiddle with a garter. Oh my God, she managed to run her right stocking all the way down to the heel. There was no stopping me now. I told her I had nightmares. Christian babies really were kosher, and I was gonna be kicked out of the Elders of Zion Youth for not having eaten my quota. But Miss Damel just swiveled on her high heels. She wanted to save her other stocking. I dropped my pen 3 times. She wasn't wearing a girdle, but she knew I was holding back. When she heard that I'd never been to a dance, she had a look on her face like Dr. Ehrlich discovering the magic bullet. Well, mixed dancing's forbidden, I told her. And besides, all the big dances are on Friday night. So you and your young lady, I'd concealed Sabina's name for her own protection. You've never danced together. Well, I don't know about her, but I've never even danced apart, unless you count hopping around in a circle with a scroll of the law in the middle. This wasn't strictly true. Sabina's father had a pile of Perez Prado records, and we'd mumbled enough in her basement that I could dance like a gigolo already. Still, Miss Damel's left hand was sandwiched between her crossed knees. Her overbitten front teeth were riding on her lower lip. It was her way of saying, poor, poor diamond in the rough. Oh, child of savages, what can I do to help? She didn't need to know that Sabina and I had even used a condom once. Not that we'd gone all the way or anything, but they'd just had their sofa recovered, and Sabina knew where her father kept some under his tefillin bag. Now, by the time I got through explaining to Miss Damel that no power on earth could ever induce my parents to let me go to a dance, you might as well send them an engraved invitation to Sodom and Gomorrah. She had tears in her eyes and one more ruined stocking. I was nothing but a victim of circumstance. Yeah, I could live if they let me, all right. I started the opening pass to the mambo. Caught myself. I was still in her office, after all. And shuffled the rest of the way out of there just as fast as I could. My right front tsitsa beating time against my thigh.
We are going to leave Joyner and have a look at the problems his mother had to deal with after the death of her husband, Joyner's father. 90 days to the minute after my father was summoned to the yeshiva on high, the phone in our candy store started ringing like the place had turned into a bookie joint. Shalom Aleichem, Mrs. Lefkis. My mother's 90 days of halachic loneliness were shown over and done with, and widowers were crawling out of the woodwork to talk long-distance children into her God. Shalom Aleichem, Mrs. Lefkis, a saprach avoidach, a tell of your glory, even though I've never seen you, and you don't know me. I'm 48 years old, 3 years Belsen, and I rent more schmaltz than any man in Brooklyn. I can promise you 2 new wicks, 3 weeks, and the country's in the shady spot after 120 years, as long as you don't mind being next door to my late wife. And if you really do take dress number 4, my Chalme Pessel, Eichzelengere Yor, took an even size high, so you'll never want for new material. Let me know what time you're arriving, and I forgot to mention, it isn't anything you'd notice, but I'm missing the top of one of my arms. You prejudiced? She was so busy hanging up, she never even heard. It was imps. My mother was convinced that imps from the Sitra Achre, from the sinister other side, had been carving her measurements into every besmedrish from Antwerp to Atlantic Avenue. Gremlins from Gehenem, they're reconfiguring Talmudic passages into my mother's womanly shape, hanging little leaden seals from every erection, and converting my widowed mother into the heartthrob and kosher pinup queen of men who wouldn't look at a woman. 33, 21, 32. She stood a refined 4'11", weighed 96 pounds, and wore a motorcycle helmet when the weather was up. It got windy down there in the coulees, and she had one concussion already from being slammed into the side of a building. Her hair, that she didn't have to hide anymore, hung all the way down to her waist in a pair of shiny black braids, like she was still dreaming of shoes in the goose yards of Poland. Her face was as forthright and pale, as smooth as the arms of Jacob. The local paper even ran a picture of the merry widow of Zion on her way to Shul one windy Shabbos. The braids reaching out from beneath her helmet, like a devotional picture of hands in prayer. It was so heartwarming, so innocuous, so insipidly parve, she could have passed for a displaced extra of the Yiddish all-theater version of Siegfried. She used to totter around in our living room in my girlfriend Sabina's old spike heels, the helmet firmly on her head in case of a mishap, like her figure was still planning to blossom. We were making around $40 a week when business was good from the store, and all of a sudden, old clothes, furniture, the slightly used bed linen of the Kolbank's Jewish community started to pour in our apartment like we just got off the boat. My girlfriend Sabina's mother was so moved by our plight, so touched by my mother's girlish hips and diffident waistline, that she started dropping off bundles of what Sabina outgrew. Jumpers, tunics, training bras. I knew every stitch from the inside out. Zoek nicht im MSB, be brutal, Jungele. My mother was tripping down an imaginary runway in the very outfit under which I'd first slid into third. It's a sin to lie to your mother, so tell me, you think I couldn't pass for Sabina's sister? I was just gone 13, so addicted to hardens and pimples that my glands lacked the strength for growing. My mother was running the back of her hand down to the end of a braid and over the top of her thigh. I noticed a tiny stain there on a tweed. Sabina had spent the last half of the Ten Commandments trying to scrub out the skirt in a movie house bathroom. And I knew all of a sudden, in my guts, not just in my head, that even there'd be no reason for my father to die. God was still in his heaven making beds with Sigmund Freud. Nyoinola, what do you think from behind? My mother's circumcised bum and grin wasn't any different from a Christian shimmy. I could only give thanks that Sabina at least wore a hair and a page boy. There was no doubt about it. My mother was the kind of bonsai sprinze which pollutes men's dreams. Forget about phone calls. Suitors were coming on pilgrimage. Bearded, bashful pietists with half-liquefied boxes of parf chocolate peeking out from between their lapels and nothing to recommend them but a spouse in the crown. They'd rub their palms on the skirts of their capotes and hope God was looking somewhere else when they started skipping their eyes like goats on the foothills over what passed for my mother's figure. The production of children was a Girobieno di Sitno, Mrs. Lefkes, a spear in Hitler's dead eye and a guaranteed chagrin to every goy drawing to breath. And by the second time around, it wasn't so important who you had them with. Mach nur zu die Lederlach. Just close your eyes and think, Am Yisroel Chai, the people of Israel lives. It was demographics we were lusting for and not anything else. So what that my mother's tubes had been tied? Among people who refer to themselves as gestrafte Juden, as chastised Jews, almost no one would admit to looking for happiness. God wird helfen. New York was full of wonderful rabbis, and the Psalms of David hadn't converted yet either. No one wanted to be happy until it looked like they might have a chance. But they never even got to my mother's side of the counter, just stood there like they'd found pork puffs in their schmurematze, while she pulled on a helmet and gave them the finger in Polish. The more suitors my mother turned away, the higher the quality of what came next. Instead of three-fingered scheuchets and chasms with chronic bronchitis, we were getting millionaires and Rosh Yeshivas, even a couple of gaboyim, major domos of important and influential rabbis. But my mother just pulled on a helmet and dumped sulfur and pitch over all their hopes. She told me she was still waiting for the jackpot. She'd taken to sitting up in one of Sabina's old baby doll nighties, conferring with a picture of my father she'd hung on the living room wall. Shaya, was that sign? What's gonna be? He had nothing to say about business. He never had a clue about me. Shaya, please make them leave me alone. But he must have been telling her something, or she wouldn't have kept giggling and calling him a nut. Think of my reputation, Shaya.
I could just see the picture shrugging.
She started sending me out of the room when her swains came calling. If they wouldn't go with me, they'd be alone with the woman. She got Sabina to sit beside her in the store. They wore identical tunics and blouses. My mother asked which twin had the Tony, and Sabina welcomed the kosher marshmallow king of Melbourne, Australia, to the Israel Bonds kissing booth. $50 on the cheek, the lips were 100, and for the real builders of Israel and Latter-day kibbutzniks, $1,000 got an official French kiss. I tried to tell my mother that the marshmallow king was probably more upset by Zionism than kissing, but my mother wasn't interested in politics. Zut Mirjoinle was der deutsche French kiss anyway. It was the first English word she'd asked me since I told her that orgasm meant middle age. A French kiss, Mama? I could be a good boy and stupid, or a bad one but smart. So I outlined the mechanics of Frenching for my mother like I'd been doing it all my life. And the tongue goes all the way in. Gleich in die Mandeln rein. You're supposed to try for Trunzel, Mama. In wie soll bist du aus München geworden? How'd you get to be such an expert? But she was smiling at my father's picture. She reached into the pocket of her dress and dropped a piece of paper onto the coffee table. Take a look. It was a telegram. Shabbos in Calgary, arriving Sunday. Signed, Rabbi J.J. Gutheiser. You could have given me a root canal right on the spot. The Lugashova rabbi, I sputtered. You mean... My mother nodded and looked at the floor. I think, Joinele, I think maybe this is my chance. This was the jackpot she'd been waiting for. A religious Jew can't break wind in Honolulu without half of New York starting to wonder who caught. And whatever happened between my mother and the rabbi would be all over the Jewish world before it even finished taking place. The fact that the rabbi was coming in all the glory of his selfhood, instead of sending a gabe or even just a message telling my mother to report to Brooklyn for inspection, they must have thought she was the next Mother Rachel. She didn't even open, of course the rabbi was 73 years old, and more known for his geniality than his pellucid intelligence. He was childless from his first marriage and mostly renowned for being the last living link to his grandfather, the famous tzaddik who turned into a potato kugel to help a childless woman. But still, a rabbi is a rabbi, and my mother's father had grown up as a chassid of the kugel. The proper wrong move could get her off the hook forever. She didn't even open the store that Sunday, just sat there reciting psalms and begging my father to intercede for her. If the plan had come from anywhere else, she'd have thought it was the imps again. My mother was out the door as soon as the rabbi's foot hit the Traven Colbank sidewalk. She wore the motorcycle helmet, a set of Sabina's old gym bloomers with Sabina's surname, Mandelbreut, stitched across the back, a pair of bobby socks and 4-inch heels, along with a fan club button the size of a grapefruit reading, I moan for Victor Moan. Things hadn't changed much in the last 6 months. My mother still hadn't mastered high heels. She pitched forward into the rabbi's terror-stricken arms, gave a yank to his beard, and shoved her down his throat for 90 irredeemable seconds. The rabbi's attendants were paralyzed by her chutzpah. But we were living in Colbanks, not New York, and by us it wasn't even a rumor. My mother could finally talk to my father about something besides events. She was still dressing like a teenager. My father must have told her he liked it. I don't know what else he was telling her, but all of a sudden she started to talk about Poland again. She woke me up one morning at 4 o'clock to tell me that Chaya was waiting to meet her there.
I bopped my shuckle on the offbeat by Passover of my junior year in high school, intoned my Torah with the fifths all flatted every Monday, Thursday, and Ubop a Shabbos. It was Mashiach ciphering for us high school schmoes. The world was going beatnik, and nobody cared if you were good in gym. 9 times through on the road, and I still didn't get it. If Christians getting drunk was the wave of the future, then the Yiddish papers were hip, as hep to the schlep as they come. But I wasn't gonna argue with success. Compared to a plain old yarmulke, my new black beret was the bendin', solid sendin', all offendin', nicht war kein jeden gedacht, livin' end. I swung with my tzitzis, flipped my little bow payas into Beat Generation sideburns, while scattin' my daily page of Talmud to a night in Tunisia. I was making my mommy mishuge. Aberetten mitzgedrinnen, ah, yarmulke isn't good enough. Oi, mama man, like, hang mich nicht auf mit die yarmulkes, like, don't hang me up with no headgear. Headgear, I'll hang you up on the wall, you hypnic, you. She was pointing at the telephone like it was contagious. I had to tell them today at the school. I had to tell them today that you're still called Yonash in English. I had to tell them my son's a liar. That in no language known to man does Yoinele really mean. She went over to the pad by the telephone where she'd written it down. Bobby isn't good enough. Bobby, at least I could understand. She tore the paper into 1,000 pieces. Soinet Zion, enemy of Zion. You had to tell them that your name means Jelly Roll. She slapped me before I could say bird lid. I'd been acting up in school, too, signing my German homework, Judensau, and pushing for the establishment of an independent Jewish state with its capital city, Munich. Well, what could you do? My parents wouldn't buy me any bongo drums. And when you're the only kid with payas for 1,000 miles in any direction, when you're stuck in southern Alberta in 1958, and your yearbook ideal of perfection is Thelonious Monk in a little red wagon, well, our sages might have called it murder, but God didn't make me left-handed for nothing. But as close as I ever came to a girl was to have some bright little blossom bump into me on 10th Street and say, I dig your curls, Jew boy. While her Elvis Presley J.D. boyfriend came out from somewhere and taught me a lesson about sticking to kosher meat. The Klan had been campaigning heavily that year, and in Coal Banks, Alberta, I was about as close to a Negro as they were gonna come. But finally, she turned up. Sabina. Sabina Mandelbroit. The Calgary-born Queen Esther of all Jewish beaches. 15 years old, afraid to sleep without a nightlight, Sabina had once drunk an actual espresso. She was an existentialist. She wore nothing but black. Her hair was black, too, as limp and stringy as month-old coleslaw. And she paved her face with some kind of white cement that used to crack whenever she talked and made her skin break out like a strawberry patch. A farzeyenish, my mother used to call her. A monster. Such a freak of nature that nobody but me ever seemed to notice that Sabina was built like a brick mikveh. Legs the length of the Jewish exile, and a set of Moseses and Aaronses that made you want to look for dry-shod Israelites in the center of all her sweaters. She got to a Yiddish language secular school in Calgary. She owned two copies of Allen Ginsberg's Howl, took one look at my payas and beret, and knew exactly what I was laying down. We used to live for the weekends when her parents went to Calgary for cultural pursuits. They were in Calgary and we were in the basement, just the two of us and her father's Dylan Thomas record. I wouldn't turn out the lights or touch the record player. God, it was a sin already to listen Shabbos. But I knew I was just as guilty as she was. She'd, take off her blouse if I let her wear my yarmulke. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, quid pro quo or something out of nothing, I don't know. All I know is we were in each other's arms, her breasts cupped under my hands, my payas a twirl in her fingers, arguing about whether my father had killed Dylan Thomas in his goddamned Brooks Brothers prayer shawl. Oh, God, whose existence I used to question while davening three times a day. Oh, God, the way the cheese whiz used to cling to her braces. She had to brush her teeth if she wanted a kiss. Beatnik or no beatnik, Trafe was still Trafe, and I wasn't going into that mouth until she hauled out the Listerine and made with the schvank, cause everything that lived was holy, but some of it still wasn't kosher. I yiskudal the yiskudash. I was getting ready to sit shiva for at least half my virginity when a freak snowstorm kept Sabina's parents from the Calgary Parrot School's annual Music is Music event. Highlights from Wagner's Ring Cycle in Yiddish just to show how big we could be. Ah, come on, baby, light my pretty chick. Forget about sexual frenzy. It was the side lock stuck in Sabina's braces and Kenneth Patchen reading on the phonograph. We didn't hear the car pull up or the house door open. Sabina's knee socks were balled up in the center of the floor. I'd removed my shirt to reveal a fringed ritual undergarment. And we were trying to see whether she could use my skull cap for a brassiere cup. Well, Sabina's parents were both psychiatrists. And by the time they'd finished laughing, there was nothing left inside my pants but a wilting, weeping willow sapling of shame. Light a Yahrzeit lamp for rebels who have failed.
Thank you very much.
We'd like to close now with something entirely different. There is a certain amount of fiction to these stories. I'm not really old enough to have been a beatnik. But I'd like to conclude with something that actually does have something to do with my own life. You know, I started out as a Hasidic delinquent and ended up here. My sister got herself a job as a secretary at the Stelco plant in Hamilton, where she met and married a guy who worked there, a truck driver, a very nice guy, who did not, at the outset, happen to be Jewish. He did, however, convert. and has, ironically enough, become somewhat more observant than my sister. Given the type of family from which I come, I was, of course, the only member of my family to attend their wedding, and I thought as a special sort of present, I would write them a little song, which we're about to do for you, and I should point out that neither my sister nor her husband has spoken a word to me since. She asked if I'd be circumcised to solemnize our love. Well, I hemmed and hawed, then crossed my heart and let push come to shove. Yeah, I underwent an orthodox conversion to Jewry in that steel town. Queen Esther got the kosher part of me. Well, I never knew from nothing but shrimp, bacon, lobster, ham. A pork chop was my paradise. Dessert was always spam. But she wore a Star of David and she kept laws dietary. And that steel town Queen Esther found the kosher part of me. So goodbye, Santa Claus. Shalom to Moses Laws. I changed my whole life for a love who loves the Torah. I went under the knife to get myself a wife. Now no one else can see kosher part of me. Well, I couldn't walk for 6 whole days. I felt a little light. I wondered, was I still all there? Was I still really white? But her father, he's a rabbi, and that pillar of piety pronounced himself quite satisfied with the kosher part of me. Well, friends, there's no flat kosher truck stop from sea to shining sea. But there's times I get a craving for a club or a BLT. But then I think about that moil, about what it did for me, about my baby softly singing, Moses Sewer, Yeshua, see. Well, each day I go to synagogue and thank the Lord above that he didn't make me the only sheep that I could ever love. I'm just a plain old working guy. I never knew no royalty till that steel town Queen Esther found the kosher part of me. So goodbye, Santa Claus. Shalom to Moses Laws. I changed my whole life for a love who loves the Torah. I went under the knife to get myself a wife. Now no one else can see the kosher part of me. I said no one else can see the kosher part of me.
Thank you very much. Thank all of you for coming. It's Heiko Lehman on musical instruments and voice. I'm Michael West. Thank you.